Welcome to the Smarticle Podcast, where we take a good article and make it gooder.
Ooh, big subject today, everybody. We definitely need a giant breath of fresh air. Here is your 5 seconds of silence, maybe the only seconds of silence you'll get all day long, brought to you by Smarticle. Brandon's going to bring out his Christian nationalists. Here's the headlines. From the sidelines, some Christians in the U.S. strive to be peacemakers as Israel-Hamas war continues. This comes via the great Mark Ramirez in the USA Today. Brandon, the Woke Magger, meet him, please.
Well, he works for the social justice group at USA Today. So it's pretty woke.
Let's woke that guy.
I don't know. I'm going to give him a number. I'm just saying. I'm assuming he's fairly woke.
Woke guy working for USA Today.
Nothing wrong with being woke. It's just not being too woke. Don't take yourself too seriously.
While some among the nation's approximately 210 million Christians strongly support one side or the other, many see themselves caught in the middle as the war strains interfaith relations, especially those between Jewish and Muslim communities, and incidents of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia rise. Survey conducted last month by research at Boston University found nearly 1 in 5 evangelical Christians had heard their pastor discuss the war during services. Nearly 3 of 10 respondents said their church had prayed for Israel. Quote, it's the notion that other countries, especially America, have a biblical duty to love Israel and support Israel, and that God will bless those who bless Israel and curse those who curse Israel, said the author of Unholy, How White Christian Nationalists Powered the Trump Presidency and the Devastating Legacy They Left Behind. This article is a little bit more nuanced than I let it out to be. There are some Christians out there that have torn issues between both the Palestinians and Israel, and they're trying to...
Yeah, a lot.
So I feel like one of the main reasons that I do have some sort of Christian-ish faith is that I do want to be a peacemaker. If you look at the example of Jesus was, he was always going for peace over anything else, and I'm always fascinated by how Christians want to bring controversy as opposed to peace.
Well, there's about 4 different things to talk about from this. The first off is...
Yes, Professor.
The first off is, how are you going to bring peace? As a Christian, and I think as an American Christian...
Christian nationalist.
We look at losing as a really bad thing. We're like, man, you got to win at all costs. You got to get ahead. You got to do it. Capitalism. All those things are built around this idea of winning.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Brandon.
Yeah.
Ricky Bobby once told me, if you're not first, you're last.
That's right. So. And there's real truth to that American idiom, that Americans feel like that. And that's the problem, is it seeps into the Christian mantra as well. And the problem with that is, as Christians, Jesus taught us, if you believe in the big Jeezy, that we need to be the first or last, the last or first, turn the other cheek. All the things he taught were like, you got to lose. If you want to make this world a better place, you got to be willing to lose. You've got to give up yourself. You've got to be willing to allow the meek to inherit the earth. This is just straightforward. Now, here's the second part of this. And this is the part that's hard for you because you don't think about this at all. And I really mean this as a compliment, not as a... In the event, especially the Pentecostal world, the hardcore evangelical Christian world, they fundamentally believe in prophecy. Uh-oh. They believe that the prophecy in the Bible trumps everything else.
Uh-oh.
Which says that if there is no nation state of Israel, Jesus cannot return to the world. They live their life thinking about the second coming of Christ. They do not live their life thinking about how we can make the world a better place. And if that's where you live your life, you're always going to side with Israel. Always.
You know what? That is like one sect of the Christian faith that, by the way, has only believed that for about 40 years.
Yeah, bro. But that is a powerful political sect.
No, I agree with you. But my point is, I used to be there thinking, Israel has to be a nation so that God can come back at the end.
One of the main reasons we so strongly support the state of Israel is because of that idea that Israel as a state is the culmination of prophecy. That, I'm telling you, dude, that is the there's the idea of American guilt and world guilt to allow the Jewish people to return after the Holocaust. And by the way, I am very pro-Israel and pro-Jew. I'm unabashed. I have a problem with everybody all of a sudden getting all excited about the Palestinians when they were the ones that started this.
Well, we should eradicate them from the Middle East.
No.
We shouldn't.
Let me be fully transparent. Okay. So what I'm saying is, but that said, I also believe that the Palestinian people deserve to be treated better than they're being treated right now by the Israeli military and all the things that are going on. They don't deserve this, and that's not Christian. So forget about the geopolitics for a second and just think about it from a person of faith. The person of faith, if you're a strong believer in Jesus, and I fundamentally believe this, we need to be standing up for the Palestinians. Period.
Wow.
So how can we stand up for the Palestinians and also believe in the veracity of the Jewish state? That's the struggle right now.
Okay.
So that's my point.
How do you, as like just a nobody in this world, guy who loves his family and has a dog and a couple of cars, like how do you, loves the big Jeezy, how do you make a difference in that? Like all of the chaos that's going on and passion behind both sides of this argument.
I think that you start by being...
Hold on. Is it to host a slideshow party at your house and invite a bunch of people over?
Okay. And I love that you ask a question, which you're trying to get a serious response from, and then you make you throw literally a hand grenade of Larry into the midst of it. No, I think that you start by following the Beatitudes at a local level, just like you do when you invited that guy, what was that homeless dude that used to ride the bike around your neighborhood, and he came over to dinner at your house that day, and I was like, wow, you got this dude, Camista. Was it Camista?
Yeah.
What was the name of Okay, so what I'm saying is that's how we show the love of Christ to the world. We love our neighbor as ourselves. We take the least in. We help people. We don't look down on them. By the way, that requires a tremendous amount of personal discipline to be able to say, hey, homeless dude, you're gross and you're on drugs and you're stealing stuff, but I'm still going to love you. I'm saying that personally, that's incredibly hard for me. What I'm saying is that for a person that's 100% pro Israeli or pro-Israel, you have to say, hey, there is another side to this and I have to love them. For that person that's pro-Palestinians, like Palestinians are being stepped on, you have to understand that there is another side of this, which is the Israeli / Jewish side, right? Because there are Jews right now in the United States who are horribly hurt by this. They have been pro-two-state solution. They have done, and all they're getting is anti-Semitism everywhere they turn. Is that the answer, to be anti-Semitic? No, of course not. So that's the big question. How do we do that?
The biggest fundamental Christians in my life, where they live, that they go to I forget that guy, that big pastor in Southern California, like very pro-belief that Israel needs to be a country in order for the second coming of the Lord. So where they stand, evangelical church, who lives right and has become their darndest best friends, is this amazing Palestinian family moved right next door to my in-laws. And now they can't just write off this beautiful, awesome family that they've come to love and be like, oh, those damn Palestinians, they're ruining our great. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. Isn't it funny? Yeah. Isn't the irony great that there are lovely Palestinian people and they live right next to you when you just want to say, let's bomb them off the face of the earth? Ha, ha, ha.
It's not easy to lose. It's not easy to admit that you need to lose. And I think that this is a God Talk Friday, and we talk about God in
this is a God Talk Friday
perspective. Yes, it's a God Talk Friday.
Okay. I thought we were doing this for funsies.
Oh yeah, because we're going to talk about the nation state of Israel and what Jesus thinks about it for funsies. Right. So, my point is, evangelical Christians need to stop worrying about prophecy. And here's the other part. This is the part I'll say about this. This is what drives me. It almost makes me not want to be a believer.
Oh geez.
Breaking news. I'll tell you
what.
These people say that's more important than anything else. They're willing to throw away everything else Jesus taught in order to say, yep, but if you don't do that, you're going to somehow get in the way of God coming back to earth. I'm like, really? You think that you can, in your little world in Walnut Creek, California, can mess up God, the creator of the universe's plan? Do you honestly think, man, if I don't show up and support the state of Israel... it's all over. It's all on my back. If I don't do this, it's done. That's my point. You can't even... The problem with these people is you can't even prove that the prophecy is true. Now,
Believe enough, Brandon.
Only reason they feel so strongly about this is because somewhere along the line, someone told them that, or they read that in scripture, and they're like fundamentally in belief of that. Well, what if you're a person that says, I'm not sure about that? Are they just going to hell? So... You know what I'm saying? That's the problem, is that where is the proof of your claim? Well, it says it in the Bible. I'm like, so what? It also says a lot of other things in the Bible. You're not holding true to them. Why are you only holding true to this prophecy that you think is true?
I will have none discussion with anybody walking the earth on this Israel-Hamas war thing. If they don't answer this
question. Except for me.
Unless they answer the question of, hey, this problem that's going on, when did it start? And if their answer is not the beginning of time, I won't have a discussion with them. Because I used to think the Bible was the start of mankind. But there's Adam and Eve. Wow. But by the way, the tribe of Israel in the middle of the Old Testament gets dropped into amongst people already living. And you could argue that those people were the Palestinians. So you make this argument from the beginning of time that the Palestinians were there and then God's chosen people came there and took the land. So there's no easy argument about whose land it is.
Yeah, but God told them to, Larry.
But my point.
You don't understand. And I know that because I read scripture that was handed down orally over 2,000 years till it was written down in the year 700 BCE. I don't know what to say to these people other than it feels like you're missing the point. The thing that you said today in this show, that if there was one takeaway for anyone to take away from that, is the fact that when people denigrate gay people or black people or Palestinian people or Jewish people, I'm like, do you actually know any of them?
I was just at a bar mitzvah, so I know some Jewish people.
Well, and that's my point, is if we don't personalize it, if we don't say, but there are real Palestinian people who are suffering right now, and real Jewish people.
There are millions
who are suffering right now.
Like literally without food and water.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, bro. You cannot take it out to that. You have to take it out to the personal. The people that are next door to your in-laws.
Yeah, man.
Are kind and good people who can show you.
You know what happens to them? You know what happens to the my neighbors of my in-laws? Every single day they get a call and they're like, cousin whatever died. Cousin is in the hospital. From people of their relatives that are dying every single day in Gaza and in that area.
So in this thing, if they can make your in-laws, who are crazy Trumpster evangelicals, if they can make them see, wow, this is a little bit more personal. It's not just something 8,000 miles away in a land that I've never been to. I remember going to, I was lucky enough to get to go to Israel a couple times.
Yes, I love this trip.
Hold on.
I love this trip.
Hold on.
I like when you tell stories.
And I went and I stood in the Garden of Gethsemane, which is run by the Franciscan monks. And so I was like, it's hard to explain. Have you ever been to Israel?
No.
The old city of Israel is actually pretty small. You could walk to all these things. So I walked across the valley. It's called the Valley of David. And I walked up to the Garden of Gethsemane, and there's all these white Americans in there, and they're standing in the Garden of Gethsemane, and they're weeping. And it's this beautiful church, by the way. And I'm like, this isn't the Garden of Gethsemane. This is not where they don't even know for sure that this is the place.
Well, you just told me it was.
It's called the Garden of Gethsemane because they had to come up with someplace. But my point is, they put all this emphasis and money and time to go to a place because they believe that's where Jesus may have walked. Or they think he did walk there. I'm like, but Jesus is walking among us every single day. He's in the person on the corner. He's in the drug addict.
Yes.
He's in that
By
the way, he's in that pastor that gets kicked out of his own church. He's everywhere, Larry. He's in Larry Olson. That's where Jesus
is. Hold on. So you're telling me that Jesus, the real Jesus, is not in the fake Garden of Gethsemane, and that I don't get to pay millions of dollars to fly to God's holy land to see him?
No. You don't. Okay. But you cannot tell some people that because they think that it's like, touch the magic stone. It's just a lot of
stuff. You know what somebody told me once? Somebody told me once that Jerusalem is like Disneyland for evangelical Christians.
It is. It's totally. Absolutely. Like, they go there and they're like, they walk down the Tabula Rasa, the street that they say that Jesus walked with a cross. They made it all up. No one knows for sure what road Jesus took. There's speculation there. My point is, it doesn't matter. It's fine to go there. And imagine what it would be like. And I love that someone takes a personal, they really want to experience that personally. There's nothing wrong with that.
Pat Olson, our listener's been there, Brandon.
Right. But the problem is when you say that's it, that Jesus isn't in the soup kitchen down the street from your house, that Jesus isn't the girl selling yogurt in the mall. Jesus is in everywhere. And we need to treat it like that. And that's what I mean. You got to be willing to lose, Larry. We have to be willing to lose our ideas around
this stuff. Okay, I know we've gone long enough, but I will not, because you're doing some storytelling. And I remember when you came back from one of your trips to God's chosen place and you talked about the Bedouin people. Quickly, just give us the story about what you learned about being with the Bedouins, because it still has changed my life.
it's interesting for anyone that knows that there are, I can't remember how many million, but there are like at least a million Israeli Arabs. They are Muslim Israelis, and they live in a group of them live in the Negev, which is it's the southern part of Israel. And Israel, by the way, is very small. It's like size it's smaller than California. It's small, little tiny country. These people, we went there because we were with, by the way, I was going there with the Jewish Federation.
Yeah.
These were people that really wanted to help.
Some street cred.
We went to this Bedouin village to meet these women that were using microfinancing to start businesses. So they were making carpets to sell to better the life of their family. And they told the story that says that when you were in the desert and you come across a tent and it might be your mortal enemy, somebody that you are sworn to kill, that person, according to Bedouin tradition, is supposed to come out and greet you, take you into their tent, feed you, and give you drink. They are supposed to be gracious and open up their homes to you, even if you're the most horrible person ever. They do that. You know why? Because in the desert, Larry, everyone needs someone to help them sometime.
Mm.
And that's just that's the idea of the Bedouin. I know you're making a joke.
No, I love
that.
I love that story. And I feel like if they actually live that out in the Middle East, you're supposed to take in your enemy because you never know who else you will run into. And when you will need help in the desert, it's a beautiful story.
Yep.
Changed my life.
I agree. I wish that we could do that, because in that case right there, both sides need to be willing to lose in order to make that happen. The person that's bringing you into the tent needs to be willing to put aside their stuff, and you need to put away your stuff in order to go into the tent.
Just for the record, if you're scoring at home, Brandon Vacations bought with the Jewish Federation to Jerusalem. Federation takes him to Jerusalem for his vacation. I go to Hawaii. So Olson's go to Hawaii.
I go to serve God's kingdom, Larry. But
the whisked away by the Jewish Federation, for God's sake.
Yeah, so good, so good. Anyway, Larry, thank you for taking the subject that's so serious and personal to so many people and making a mockery of it. I really appreciate that.